The end of the world is coming.
It was predicted thousands of years ago.
See ya!
A reverse polarity sunspot.
Goodbye!
There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream.
This is the end.
This week we are talking with our friends at Scientific American about endings, cultures fading, natural resources dwindling,
and how
so often the end of one thing is really the beginning of another, and that's what brings us to our conversation today.
Did you hear that listener there in the promo?
I did, and she was talking about how difficult it was for the family to deal with them harvesting organs from her loved one who had passed away.
Well, you know, my college roommate died like 5 years ago. He donated his kidney to his nephew. And very traumatic situation. He died as a result of a medical error. And, you know, I think about that kidney still alive in his nephew.
In interest of full disclosure, you and I are both organ donors.
Yes, that's true.
But, you know, when you talk about endings, as we are all this week, you're often what you're really talking about is the passage of time. And you can talk about the ending of eras. You can talk about the ending of the age of the Renaissance, centennial anniversaries. But today, it's much, much more narrow. We're talking about a minute, 60 seconds, that could go by very quickly. And yet, in this particular case, these are 60 seconds that could determine the ending of one life and the beginning of another. So to talk about this and explain is Robin Morantz-Hennig. She wrote a piece about a controversial practice in this month's Scientific American magazine. And we also have Dr. Bill Pietra. He's a medical director of the Pediatric Cardiac Transplant Program at Denver's Children's Hospital. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a difficult subject to talk about because obviously emotions run very high, but I want to be extremely clear about what it is that we're talking about today. Of all the organ donors, 85% of them are brain dead when their organs are harvested. Correct, Robin?
That's true. And even that definition is a difficult one. You know,
whether there's brain activity or not.
Whether there's brain activity, and for people to understand that brain death is equivalent to death, because you look at the body and it's pink and breathing.
Right. Okay. There's a small subset, 15% of organ donors, who still have a little bit, at some sign of activity in the brain, but are dead.
Are about to be dead.
Right.
These are imminently dead. There's nothing you can do about it. They will die very soon.
Right. Exactly. And this is where the difficulty comes in. So what we're talking about is the difference between 1 minute after death and 2 minutes after death. Explain.
Well, according to the dead donor rule, which is the convention of when you donate an organ, you have to be dead first. You have to wait, in the case of these 15% of donation after cardiac death, for the heart to actually stop beating on its own, and then wait a certain amount of time to make sure it's not going to resuscitate on its own. Nobody has seen a heart sort of come back to activity at any later than 2 minutes after it first stopped beating. So the convention has been to wait 2 full minutes after the heart stops beating before you harvest the heart.
But at this point, Dr. Pietra, maybe you can explain, especially in cases that you deal with, you actually do organ transplants with children.
Right. And so, I mean, the biggest thing with brain death is that it's a difficult concept, I think, for the layman to understand, is that you're exactly right, that the patient appears pretty well. They're not breathing because they have to be on life support. That's not true. So they go to the operating room. Their heart is beating at the time it's harvested, but they have met the legal definition of death. What we've done with DCD, which is a donation after cardiac death, is basically use organs, including the heart. And for children, the biggest thing is that children are developing. So if you make rules about this is what brain death is, and it's based on development, many children and infants never will meet those criteria, yet they are going to die. And that's the tragedy here, is that we have lots of children that have futile disease. They are going to die. And their parents are motivated. They want to donate. They sort of have a right to donate. And that's the other flip side of this that I think we should bring out, is that there is a right to donation. And by doing the DCD protocol, we basically harvest the heart after it stops. within a defined period, just as Robin was talking about.
But Robin, you heard the clip from the woman who said that they discovered after her sister passed away that she was an organ donor, and it was very traumatizing for the family that they harvested her organs.
Well, from what I understand of organ donors, most people feel differently from that. Most people feel the way John was saying, that a little bit of that loved one is still alive elsewhere, and that they feel like taking a tragic death and turning it into something meaningful, just sort of adds to their feeling that things are going to be okay.
But what we're really talking about here is moving this waiting period up, moving away from that 2-minute timeline, right?
Right. And in fact, some people who I talk about in the article go so far as to say what we should move away from is the dead donor rule. We should not even require that the organ donor meet certain criteria of death.
But I mean, how do voluntary organ donors donate, say, a kidney while they're alive? I mean, what are the protocols there?
Oh, that's totally different from these issues, because we have two kidneys and you can do with just one.
In fact, many people are born with just one functioning kidney.
Right.
Isn't that a precedent for maybe modifying these things?
Not in this case. I mean, what we're talking about here is donating what they call vital organs, organs that you can't live without. A heart, lungs.
Well, Dr. Pietra, I have to ask you, I mean, any time you start redefining, I mean, obviously we've seen how much controversy there is over redefining when life begins, but there's also a lot of motion caught up in talking about when life actually ends. And that can be very difficult for families to say that let go, stop trying to resuscitate, right?
Typically in the DCD patients, that's not the case. These patients, and the other part that's not kind of brought out in the article is that most of the decision-making, the handling of the patients, and so forth, is not done by our team. It's done by the baby's doctors. And they're the real heroes in this, because what they're trying to do is they've done everything they could to try to save this child's life. They have come to the conclusion this is futile. With the parents, they have, decided to withdraw support. So this is a child that is going to die.
Well, and let me ask you, what does that minute make? We're running out of time, but let me ask you, how significant can that minute be in that transplant in the patient who?
Well, we don't really know. I mean, we are kind of like the Wright brothers with aircraft. I mean, we did it. We came up with a protocol because we knew that time was important for the heart. That the longer it sat warm and without oxygen, the less likely it was going to work. And in fact, the very first one we did, where we waited 3 minutes, didn't work as well as the subsequent hearts that we did. So we know that it's important, and we're not saying this is how you do it. I think it's proof of principle.
Dr. Bill Pietra is the medical director of the Pediatric Cardiac Transplant Program at Denver Children's Hospital, and Robin Morantz-Hennig, author of When Does Life Belong to the Living? That's an article that appears in this month's Scientific American magazine. Thanks so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.